Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now a call in primarily for parents who adopted children as a first choice, not because you couldn't have biological children. This is a follow-up to a segment that we did recently that you may have heard on China, making it harder for people from other countries to adopt Chinese babies. And our framing of that segment, for which I was mostly responsible, even though I wasn't the host that day, has drawn criticism on some adoption-oriented websites and lists, specifically the language that we used that said China had been a ready source of adoptable babies for so many infertile New Yorkers. Some adoptive parents were offended for two reasons. One, the phrase ready source made it sound like they were just out on some kind of baby market, dehumanizing all involved, and didn't acknowledge the overwhelming hurdles that they had to clear with the word ready, even if they were successful in adopting from China. And secondly, the word infertile offended parents for whom adoption is a first choice. So we will open up the phones now, specifically for parents who have adopted as a first choice, rather than because you couldn't have biological children. Call in and tell your stories at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And here's one post to give you an idea that was sent along to me. It said, "Is anyone else as offended at this characterization as I am? Why can't people regard adoption as a first choice and not compensation for failure to conceive a biological child? And what's up with the ready source? Is China a shopping mall for New Yorkers in the market for children? This language reveals a level of ignorance that mocks all our efforts to form healthy, normal families and educate the public at large about adoption." So we also invite you to amplify on or disagree with the thoughts in that email. I do tend to think that this is still a fairly small minority of adoptive parents, though I could be wrong. It is among adoptive parents, I know, a small minority, which doesn't make it a definitive sample by any means. But you can talk about whether you really think it's inaccurate to frame China's recent place as being at least a prime source for Americans to adopt, and if most of those looking to do so were not infertile couples or individuals, you tell me. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and Robin in Cranford. You're on, look at these lines filling up. Robin in Cranford, you're on WNYC. Hi, Robin, you're first.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me on the call. My husband and I decided to adopt a child initially because we are both second marriages, and mm-hmm. my husband had biological children. Mm-hmm. I had no children at all. And this was a way for us to expand a family and do something together that neither one of us had done before. And what's interesting is most people do approach us and assume that because we have adopted a child, it is because we had infertility issues. And I agree with your statement in that I would say most people I do meet, they have adopted after attempting to have a biological child. And so although people perceive that as being a second best, it really isn't. And I think that's the perception that most adoptive parents struggle with, is that when they see us with our children, they seem to feel as if we've somehow settled, and it couldn't be farther from the truth.
Right.
Children have just enriched our lives beyond compare.
I guess one question that I have about the sentiment in the email is, why does it get in the way of proving that adoptive parents really love your kids and that your families are healthy, normal families to acknowledge that most adoptive parents probably did try to have biological children first. I mean, they would have to tell the kids that at some point anyway, and of course it doesn't make the parents love them any less.
No, I think that's true. I think it just sometimes, I think for the individuals out there like myself and some others, where going down the path of having a biological child was just not something we decided, mm-hmm. and that our children were chosen because we wanted to adopt them. And I think it just makes us, it's language. I think it mm-hmm. just, it all ties into appropriate adoptive language mm-hmm. is what we find as a collective group. And I think this group of families has become very sensitive to the language that the outside world uses. And with China in the media today, with the changes in the legislation, I think the unfortunate media and the press has been very insensitive to what really happens when we go out and we expand our family through mm-hmm. adoption and going into China. It's almost, to go back to your earlier point about China being a ready source, and that's really not the case. I mean, if you look at it, over the years, China has been a country where the process has been very predictable, and people that wanted to adopt could go there with pretty very certain rules. They didn't change very much, and we knew we could go there, and within a certain amount of time, we would become parents. And it really is for us about becoming parents. It's not about anything else, mm-hmm. and it's a very long and arduous process.
Absolutely.
That we go through to decide where to go and then to how to extend our family. We don't just decide one day. We don't wake up one day and say, oh, I think I'll adopt a child from China. You know, for us, it was an 8-month process to even come to the conclusion that we were going to go to China.
Mm-hmm. Robin, thank you very much.
You're
for your
very welcome.
I appreciate your perspective. And Jake in Norwalk, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jake.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Great. My wife and I decided to adopt as a first choice. And it had nothing to do with biology at all. It was we always knew we wanted to have like a multicultural family, and we thought it'd be better for the kids that we adopted and for our future biological children if we did it first.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so your goal is to adopt children who are ethnically different from you, so you have a multicultural family.
Well, that's not exactly the goal, but you know, it's working out that way. The goal, we knew that we wanted to adopt because, well, for example, the orphanage that we're adopting from in Vietnam, there's like 56 children all lying down on a mat. You know, what we're doing is really trying to just help some of these kids out, and it happens that they're from a different culture.
Yeah, I guess if a lot of Americans made sort of rational decisions, not to say that a decision to have your own biological children, which I did, is irrational, but if you were to make a purely rational decision, it might wind up that a lot of people, a lot more people, would say, hey, look, there are plenty of people in the world, and there are plenty of babies in the world and other children in the world in need of homes. I read a stat from an African organization just yesterday that said there are 43 million African orphans.
Wow.
Presently. And so if people were to wrap their brains around that and say, well, it only kind of makes logical sense that we match some of these kids up with people who want to be parents before we start bringing other kids into the world.
Exactly. It's really, my wife worked at an orphanage in Nicaragua for a few months when she was a teenager, and that's sort of what got the whole thing going. It's
uh-huh.
just a need. It's a humanitarian need. These kids need to get, you know, placed in families. They need, and the ladies working at the orphanage are just really excited to, okay, we have 50 kids, let's just try and get them, you know, households. And that's really a big part of it.
It's an interesting thought to start out with the adopted
right.
child so they will never feel like an afterthought.
And they also, exactly, an afterthought. And the other thing is they really need a little more attention when you get them. They're going to have attachment disorders and things like that. And you need to pay close attention to them, more so than you would, you know, a baby that you had at a hospital.
How'd you wind up with Vietnam as the place?
Natalie, my wife, is she's 28, so we're too young for China. And
you have to be a certain age for China?
China, oh yeah, they're real strict.
Oh.
You also have to have like a lot of money in the bank. You have to have like $80,000 in the bank.
Uh-huh.
Things like that. And Vietnam, we kind of wanted to avoid some of the, you know, problems from Europe, like there's a lot of fetal alcohol syndrome and things like that. And as young parents, we don't want to take on too much, you know. So it's a long process. We came up with Vietnam, and they're actually changing their system now, too. They're going to be more like China, which is it's basically the government, the Vietnamese government will now be doing the referrals. So right now, the way it works, and this will stop, this is going to change at the Tet. The way it works is the actual adoptive agencies, the adoption agencies, are the ones who choose the parents and match the parents with the children. So we sort of snuck in before that deadline.
So let me ask you another touchy question. On the part of the complaining email that said it's I'm looking for it now. China is China a shopping mall for New Yorkers and the market for children? I mean, is there an element of shopping? You know, you're looking for babies with a lower risk of fetal alcohol syndrome,
right,
and where you don't have to have $80,000 in the bank. I mean, for better or worse.
Well, if you want to look at it as shopping, I suppose you can, but it's not it's not that. Although there is the whole thing where, you know, this is costing us $45,000.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, you know, it's in a way you could think of it that way, but that's definitely not how we look at it. The way you look at it is, you know, we want to adopt a baby, and let's find the baby to adopt. And I guess you could think of it as shopping, but it's really kind of offensive to think of it that way.
Jake, thanks so much. Good luck with the twins.
Thanks.
Angelo in Seymour, Connecticut. You're on WNYC.
Hi, it's Angela.
Angela, I'm sorry.
I have two.
It's the girl version of Angel.
Yeah. Two adopted babies. One's two, one's 2 months, and they're domestic adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to agree with what Jake says. Sometimes, especially China's prohibitive. And we're kind of, you know, definitely middle class. And when we were thinking about having children, we went to some fertility doctors. And the price was just, you know, for us, just not affordable. And we quickly realized that what we wanted to do was to be parents and to have a family. And being biologically related was not really
so important to you. Yeah.
No, not really.
Uh-huh. So tell us about your kids.
Okay. Well, my first daughter, she's actually a domestic adoption, but she is a little, both parents are Mexican, and she's adopted from New York City. And then my son came home on Halloween. He was born a few days before. And actually, when we were contacted by the birth mother, she was into her 8th month.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought him home really quick. And I think that sometimes people, like Jake and Robin, both had a lot of information. So I think sometimes everyone thinks the first place or the only place to go may be China or Russia, but there's other options. Like he was discussing Vietnam, and there's so many domestic babies that need to be adopted as well.
If you tell... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, especially in New York, there's a lot of, you know, undocumented workers, both Eastern European women and Latin American women that are coming in now.
And they're having a higher rate than other people of giving their babies up for adoption?
Yeah. Which is what happened to my daughter's mother. She was an undocumented worker and just, you know, couldn't really afford to care for the baby here.
Such a sad story. Do you ever get a reaction that's positive or negative or whatever when you tell your friends or tell other people that adoption was a first choice for you? How do people react to that?
I think we don't get as much because I'm European descent and my husband is Puerto Rican,
mm-hmm.
and our children, we have similar coloring, so they look.
So they look at the kids and they don't think to ask. And
yeah, a lot of people don't. But a lot of times when I discuss it, I find the reaction is, well, how could their mothers give them up? Especially my son's mother was a college-educated person, but, you know, she made the choice. She realized she mm-hmm. just couldn't do it. And a lot of people are negative to that. And I feel, you know, that's her choice. She was mm-hmm. realistic about what she could handle and what she couldn't.
Angela, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Good
I
luck.
Love your show, by the way.
Thank you very much. Good luck with your
Bye.
Kids. Jane in... Oh, let's see. I have to turn that one off. There. Jane in Wilton. You're on WNYC. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Okay. I adopted my daughter 10 years ago from Guatemala. At the time, I was married, so we adopted as a couple. And I think your comment that it's fairly rare that couples who aren't infertile adopt is probably true.
Mm-hmm.
In the classes we had to take to prepare for our home study, we were the only couple that were first-choice adopters. I have a lot of friends, though, that are single women and who want to be parents but don't have a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as they know, they're fertile, but adoption for them is the way they became a parent
alone. And I would imagine there would be a significant representation of gay and lesbian couples in that group, too, because they have to go through the decision process of, you know, do we want to have a baby? Well, if there's a woman involved, or even with more complexity, if there's a man involved, do we want to have a baby that is biologically of one partner but not the other? And so some of them might choose adoption so that the baby is biologically neither, therefore equal.
Yeah, I think that's true. But keep in mind, particularly for international adoptions, you were talking a while ago about the choices and how do you choose your country. They are limited as gay and lesbian people, what countries they can adopt from. And we were limited as fertile people, the countries that we could choose to adopt from.
They tested your fertility?
Depending on the country, they required lots of medical documentation that you were infertile.
Wow. Now, why would they throw up that barrier?
I wasn't really sure. The country that I began the search with was Nepal, and the explanation I got was that they were very mistrusting of a fertile couple who wanted a baby. They feared that you wanted to use that child as an indentured servant.
Wow.
And that they could not imagine why somebody who was fertile would want to adopt to have that child as their own.
Well, and that goes to the very heart of the criticism that prompted this segment, which is that people who make adoption their first choice have a lot of assumptions to put up with. One came from me, and now I've been educated, and they come from all over the place, including that kind of stereotype from some of the governments that would be suspicious of your fundamental motives and even wanting to adopt a child if you're fertile.
Right. Yeah, I was shocked when I found that out. I mean, ultimately, the other issue about searching as opposed to shopping was that I'm absolutely convinced I wasn't meant to adopt from Nepal. I was meant to adopt from Guatemala because that's where my daughter was. You know, once you bring your child home, you cannot imagine any other child. That's your child. Some people are lucky enough, they just have to look, you know, to their womb to find their child. We had to go look in Guatemala.
Congratulations, Jane.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Yep, thanks.
Andrew in Centerport, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thank you. I adopted as a single father from China, and then I met and married my wife. We have four children, three of whom are adopted. One was born to my wife in her from her first marriage. So we have China, Russia, Korea, and the United States. The, you know, this whole conversation, I'm so appreciative. I'm so thankful that you've put this on your show. This is a leap of faith. Any time you expand your family, it's a miracle. This is human life. And we get intrigued, I guess, and drawn into the details of this or that or the other thing. And I get it. I understand, because I was, too, drawn to these details. But the comments that get made are sometimes despicable. Sometimes they're well-meaning. Sometimes they're ignorant. Who knows? But at the end of the day, it's always this. It is what it is. It is what it is. And we always talk about, you know, my kids were adopted. They are not adopted, because that implies that it's over. It was a segment, a thing that was done in the past, but now we are a family in the present tense. And I have to say it's a secret. I feel like it's a secret. And I playfully will say to some of my friends at those side things like, "Oh, you didn't want to have any kids of your own." Now, you know, I can go anywhere with that comment, right? But I try to be nice about it, and I'll say, oh, you're not able to adopt?
try to
make light of it. Because, by and large, people are well-meaning. But
right. Well,
and especially right in front of my children. Sometimes people make these comments directly.
Oh, that's
directly,
really
and
terrible.
And my oldest is 7, my youngest is 6 months.
That's really unforgivable.
So.
And to say of your own. And so that's another example, and I've certainly learned through this process, and hopefully a lot of other people have from listening to this, why language matters. And so there's a perfect example to end on, since we're out of time, to call an adopted children not of your own, which is really a shame. Andrew, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you. Thanks
to all of you who called. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. This program is produced by Nuala McGovern with Jim Colgan, Lisa Allison, Priya George, help today from Spencer Wilking, and Debbie Daughtry at the audio controls. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.